Did you know that this domino has the capacity and potential to knock down a domino as high as the Empire State Building? How? How could that be? How could something so small have such a grand effect? The only way something so small could have such a grand impact is if you take this domino and place it within a sequence or chain of dominoes, in which every domino that falls is 1.5 times the size of the preceding domino. Dominoes function by utilizing potential and kinetic energy. And when that kinetic energy is released, it passes along the chain of dominoes. And it creates this grand effect when they're put in this series or this sequence. One push and everything changes. That is true not only in dominoes, that's true not only in the world of physics, in the world of nature, but that's also true in relationships. One decision, one action, one word can have a profound effect because we, like dominoes, are found in the context of relationships. We're found in the context of a connection of in a community of people. And so what we do matters, what we say matters, how we show up matters, our attitude, our disposition, all of these things affect other people because we are relational beings. And so one word of encouragement can have a profound effect. One word of discouragement can completely shut someone down. And so how we act, how we live in this world matters. And there is a force at play in our lives and in our relationships. It's not gravity. It's not kinetic energy or potential energy. No, it's an even more powerful force. The force that is at play in our relationships is the force of love. And if we are to understand that force, we need to go to the teachings of Jesus. So if you have a Bible, I'd love if you could turn with me to John chapter 15, where we're going to learn from the teachings of Jesus. In John 15, beginning in verse 9, Jesus is talking with his disciples, and he says this, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept the Father's commands and remain in his love." What we see in this passage is we see that the love that Jesus has for us is a love that he's received from God the Father. And then it's a love that he passes on to us. You see, we are relational beings because we serve a relational God. And just like these dominoes here, the love that the Father has is poured out to the Son, and the love that the Son has is then poured out to us. And so we see love transmitted through relationships, from person to person, from Jesus to the disciples, and then on throughout the centuries to us. We have become the recipients of a divine and a profound love. And so as we look at these two verses in John 15, what we become aware of is one of the principles of love. The principle of love is simply this, that the love received is the love that's given. We see this true in from the Father to the Son to us, but we also see this to be true. The realm of psychology and sociology attests to this fact. Because if you study family dynamics and relationships, oftentimes what happens is the love that was received from the parent is then passed on as that person grows up and develops and then has their own families passed on to their kids. So the love you experience from your family is the type of love that you often tend to display to your own kids. That's not only true in the context of family, but in friendships and other relationships as well. The love that we receive is often the type of love that we give. And so the love that we give and display day after day, week after week, is not a Christ-like love. It's typically a worldly love, because the love that we display more often than not is a tick for tack type of love. It's an eye for eye type of love. It's a tooth for tooth type of love. Whatever love or type of love I receive, that is what I'm going to give. If I receive a lack of love, then I'm going to give a lack of love, because that which is received dictates that which I'm going to give. And so our lives in many ways are similar to this sequence of dominoes, because that which we receive is then passed on to the people that we interact with. And so it's profoundly important for us to understand this principle, that the love received is the love given. And if we're to give a Christ-like type love, then we need to better understand the love that we receive from Jesus. But that's the principle of love. And yet what we also see to be true in this passage is that we see that love, when we receive it from Jesus, it has two profound effects in our life. And the first effect that we see actually, again, is found in these same verses. Jesus says this, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept the Father's commands and remain in his love." Three times in two verses, Jesus repeats this word, remain. He invites us and commands us to stay. What love teaches us to do, what love causes us to do, love causes us to stay. That is a profound effect that love has, because our hearts are not prone to stay anywhere. If you've ever had a dog, you know one of the most difficult things to do is to teach it to sit and to stay, because it's prone to roam and run and wander. And our hearts oftentimes are similar. We want to roam and wander as soon as something becomes uncomfortable or inconvenient, and we are not prone to stay. That's especially true in the context of relationships. And yet when we stay, we experience a profound benefit. I've seen that evidenced in my parents' marriage. Growing up, my parents had very different upbringings. My dad, he had a father who's African-American, grew up in Harlem, New York. My dad's mom was from Thailand, and so she grew up in a Buddhist culture, and she was raised in Bangkok. And then on my mom's side, my mom grew up in Edina, Minnesota. Her father was a successful entrepreneur and businessman. She came from a Norwegian and Scandinavian background, and so my parents coming together culturally had very different perspectives, socioeconomically had very different positions in society, and yet they came together and they met in a Christian ministry. They fell in love with one another, and as they grew in their relationship, they felt the Lord leading them and calling them to commit to one another, to take that next step, to stay in relationship with one another. And so despite differing opinions and perspectives, and despite a low view of marriage that their families had, and the controversy that ensued on both sides because of their willingness to enter into an interracial marriage, they decided to take that step. And it was challenging and difficult, and yet it's borne such beautiful fruit over the years. And their marriage has been far from perfect. It's had to weather many a storms. It's experienced a lot of brokenness and imperfection, and yet they have chosen to stay. They've chosen to stay committed to one another, to stay in love with one another. We don't fall in love. We stay in love with those whom God has placed in our life. And that is what love causes us and teaches us to do. That's true and ought to be true not only in the relationship with our spouse, that ought to also be true in our relationship with the Lord. We stay in his love. We remain in his love. And that also ought to be true in the context of believers, as we choose to stay committed to loving one another. Here at Wooddale Church, I have the privilege of being our group life pastor, which simply means I get to oversee a variety of groups, from men's ministry to Sunday morning community groups to life groups that meet throughout the week and are multi-generational. And recently I had the opportunity to talk with one of our life group leaders and just asked, like, hey, how's it going? And she sent me this message and I was so encouraged by it. She said this about what God is doing in her group, specifically referring to one of her group members named Sandy. She said this, "Sandy started attending Wooddale around Easter of 2025 and joined the life group shortly after. Over the last year, we've had the privilege of watching her faith grow. We've heard her questions about salvation, prayed through her request, and watched her become more open and engaged with each passing week. What stands out to me is that none of this came naturally or easily. She committed to attending a new church, joining a life group, building relationships, and stepping into community even when it felt uncomfortable. One of my favorite examples is when she discovered that she and one of our younger guys in our group, Jacob, shared a love for the same band. They ended up going to a concert together. It's such a simple picture of how genuine relationships can form when people are willing to take a risk and put themselves out there. Sandy is continuing to volunteer, make new friends, and deepen her relationships at Wooddale. She's even said yes to Jesus. I think of her story as a beautiful example of someone sacrificing comfort in order to build community. Because she was willing to trust God and lean into relationships, her love for Jesus, the church, and the people around her has grown tremendously. It's a reminder that life-changing relationships begin with the simple decision to show up even when it's uncomfortable. I love this example of Sandy's faith because it's such a profound example of what happens when love teaches us to stay in the context of community. It is not difficult, but when we do so, it is deeply rewarding and beneficial. But why? Why should we stay? It's for our benefit. Jesus goes on to say this in verse 11, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. The reason that Jesus invites us to stay in love with him and with the body of believers is because it leads to a fullness, a completion of joy that we would not otherwise experience. So if you're lacking joy, if your joy is not full and complete, then perhaps the reason is because you have not taken the step to commit and invest and stay rooted in love with God and with the people that God has placed in your life. So that is the first effect that love ought to have in our lives. But there's a second effect as well. And we see this, Jesus goes on to say in verse 12, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay one's life down for one's friends. In these next two verses, what we see is that Jesus gives us a second effect of love. But not only a second effect, he also gives us the measurement for love. He says the way that you measure love is by your willingness to lay down one's life for a friend. The measurement of love is not based on the hormones that we experience or the emotions that we experience or the desire and the pull and the attraction we have towards another person. It's not based on the circumstances of the day. No, it's not based on the words or the text messages that we send. No, the love that we have for others is measured by the extent that we are willing to go and to sacrifice ourselves on their behalf for their good, for their benefit. Love is measured by sacrifice, and that is the second effect that love has in our life. When we receive the love of God, it causes us to sacrifice on behalf of others. How do you know if you've received the love of God? Are you willing to sacrifice? How do you know that love is present in your relationships? Are they willing to sacrifice? Are you willing to sacrifice? If there is no sacrifice, there is no love. Sacrifice requires the willingness to put aside your own preferences, your own desires, your own wants, your own rights, your own opinions, your own priorities on behalf of another person. Sacrifice is not comfortable and convenient, it's costly. Yet this is the type of love that Jesus invites us into, he calls us to display. The reason sacrifice is so challenging is because it requires us to get rid of us, to remove us from the equation and put somebody else first. Sacrifice is told, there's stories told of sacrifice. And if you look throughout human history, there's so many profound moments where sacrifice is put on display on behalf of a loved one, on behalf of a country, on behalf of a group of people. And so often we talk about sacrificing these grand moments, but more often than not, sacrifice is not found in the grand moments, but in the mundane moments, in the simple moments. Sacrifice is much more common than you would ever think or imagine. Sacrifice can be as simple as being willing to wake up early in the morning to commit to being in relationships with others. Sacrifice can be as simple as being willing to give up an hour of your time. Peter is a phenomenal example of this. He's one of our new men's ministry leaders, and he has committed to waking up at and being present at 6 a.m. every single Wednesday morning to pilot a new men's ministry fitness group where these guys come together and they work out and then they pray to get one another and they have a time of fellowship. And what began at as two guys has now grown to 4 to 6 and now to over 10 guys. And it's a multi-generational mix of guys who are working in the corporate world to have inviting their sons who are in high school to be a part of this. And they're waking up and they're working out and they're worshiping the Lord together and they're praying to get one together. And it's been a beautiful example of what happens when men choose to commit to being in relationship with one another, to doing life with one another. And yet Peter's sacrifice is so evident, and it's not grand, but it's simple, and it's beautiful to see the way in which he chooses to do so each and every week, because sacrifice is costly and it's not easy. Oftentimes we think that sacrifice is complex. It's not. It's just costly. It costs us ourself. Are you willing to lay down yourself for the benefit of another? The reason this is so often difficult is because what sin does in our life is it causes us to be self-exalting, self-preserving, self-gratifying, self-seeking. And so in so many different moments throughout the day, we want to pursue self. We want to acknowledge self. We want to glorify self. And yet sacrifice invites us to take a different road. It invites us to crucify ourselves, to be willing to put our preferences and desires on a cross so that somebody else might benefit from the love that we share with them. But why? Why in the world would we love in this type of way? It doesn't make sense. Why would we do this? In order to answer that question, we must go back to the principle of love that is given to us by Jesus. The only way we can give that type of love is if we've received that type of love from Jesus. And if we've received that type of love from Jesus, then we can and ought to give it. Jesus commands us to give it. Jesus does not command us to give a type of love that he has not already given and made accessible to us. No, rather what we see is that Jesus demonstrates for us what a love it looks like when it chooses to stay. Because even in the midst of your sin, even in the midst of your brokenness, even in the midst of poor decisions and hard circumstances, God has chosen to stay. He's chosen to stay by your side. He's, regardless of how your heart has been prone to wander and roam far from his presence, he has stayed committed to you. Not only does Jesus chosen to stay in pursuit of us, Jesus has chosen to sacrifice. He says, love as I have loved you. He's not calling us to love as we love ourselves. He's raising the bar and saying, love as I have loved you. And if we want clarity on what it looks like to love like Jesus, then we need no look no further than the cross, because it's there that we see sacrificial love on full display. It was the love of God, the love that Jesus received from the Father that led him to a garden in which he allowed himself to be willingly be bound by Roman officers and then taken and beaten and stripped and humiliated and hung on a cross. It was the love of God that allowed him to stay on a cross. Jesus is the creator of the world. He spoke stars into existence. He formed you, knit you together in your mother's womb. He has all authority and dominion over all of creation, and yet he chose to stay and to sacrifice on a bloody cross, and then he chose to be buried. The one who has dominion and authority over life and death submitted himself to death for 3 days so that on the third day he could rise again as God, as the King of Kings, as the Lord of Lords, as the one who always is and always will be. And it's because he rose from the dead that he alone is worthy of our praise. He alone is worthy of our worship. And yet what we see in and through the life of Jesus is we see him stay and sacrifice on our behalf. So when he asks us to love, when he commands us to love, he is not asking us to do something that he has not already demonstrated for us on our behalf through the gospel, through his life, through his ministry. That's the love that he gives us readily. That's the love that is available to us. And if we've received it, then we ought to give it. We got to give it to specifically the body of believers. Jesus' prayer in two chapters later, he's praying for us. And he says this. He says, my prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe their message. That's us. that all of them may be one, Father. Just as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us, and the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. The way in which Jesus says that the gospel will be made known to the rest of the world, that the love of God will be made known to the rest of the world, is when we display the love of Jesus, not only for the world, but for one another. That as we display that love for one another, as we give that love to one another, to the body of believers, what that does is it displays complete unity. It displays the love of God that Jesus received from the Father and has made accessible to us. Did you notice the last phrase in that verse? The love that the Father has is the same extent to which he loves his Son. You see, our relationships really are analogous to these series of dominoes, because the love that the Father has, the same love that he has for his Son, is poured out from the Son to us. And then Jesus invites us to pour that love out that we receive from him to the body of believers. And when we do that, we are able to have a profound effect on this world, one that displays the love of God. And the world looks at that and says, that's different. That's not of this world. I want to know that type of love. I want to receive that type of love. And so it's critical that we give that love. The manner in which we give that love is simply through displaying the third mark of spiritual maturity, which is committing to life-changing relationships. That's what spiritual maturity requires, is that we commit to life-changing relationships. Every relationship that we have is life-shaping, because we are people in the context of community, and we are shaped by the people that we spend time with. The Apostle Paul teaches this in 1 Corinthians 15:33. He says, bad company corrupts good character. So who we surround ourselves with matters, because people shape and affect our spiritual lives. Yet not every relationship that we have is life-changing. The relationships in which we commit ourselves to the body of believers is life-changing, because it's the body of believers that have received the transformative power of the gospel. And so it's when we spend time with them that we are changed and transformed into the image of Jesus. And that's why it's critical that we do so. I find it fascinating that Jesus' plan to change the world was to gather 12 guys together, 12 guys who had radically different cultural upbringings, socioeconomic standings, political ideologies. Matthew was a Jew and a tax collector. So he was one who would have been viewed as a traitor and an extortionist, because he's partnering with the Roman Empire and extorting good riches from his own people to benefit him and the Roman Empire that was oppressing them. And within that same group of 12, you have Simon, who was a zealot. He was zealous about opposing the Roman Empire, about eliminating Roman officers and collaborators. And so they would have been at odds with one another. In that same group, you have a group of men from Galilee who were blue-collared workers, fishermen, Peter, James, and John. You also had intellectuals like Nathaniel and Philip, who would have had a higher social status because of their education and the Greek influence and the culture that they were immersed in. And then you have outsiders like Judas. And yet Jesus brought all of these people together and invited them and commanded them to love one another. And he told them, as they love one another, that the love of God would be on full display and that the world would know of his love. And so it's in the life of the disciples and in the teachings of Jesus that we see this invitation for us to commit to life-changing relationships. Love teaches us to say. Love teaches us to sacrifice. And when we're willing to do those things, we are able to have a profound, more powerful effect and impact on this world than we could ever think or imagine. So one more time, we'll return to these dominoes. This domino is only 1.5 inches tall, and yet it has the capacity to knock down one 11,500 times its size. And the only way it can do so is if it stays in proximity to another group of dominoes. If you isolate it from the rest, it will have no impact. It has to stay in proximity to the other chain of dominoes, and then it has to be willing to lay itself down, to sacrifice itself on behalf of the next domino in order for that momentum and the effect of the motive force to be passed on from one to the next, so it can make a profound impact far greater than it could ever have in itself. Similarly, if we are to have a profound effect, we have to stay in proximity to the body of believers. We have to be willing to sacrifice on their behalf. And we do so by committing to the body of believers, by committing to life-changing relationships. So how is God inviting you to apply this message? Maybe there's one person in your life that he's inviting you to stay and to sacrifice for. Or maybe you're not plugged into biblical community. Maybe the Lord is inviting you to take that next step, to commit to life-changing relationships, however costly it may be, and to get connected into a group. If you'd like to take that step, again, I serve as the group life pastor here at Wooddale, and I'd be happy to connect you. We'll have a QR code on the screen for you to do that. And I'd love to see you take that step of faith. It's a practical way to apply this message and to display the love that God has for this world. Father God, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for your teachings. Thank you most of all for your profound love. The love that you have for us, the love that you have given to us through Jesus. God, help us to give that love to the world around us. Help us to give that love to one another. Committing to relationships is hard, it's costly, and yet it's rewarding. It leads to a completeness and a fullness of joy. God, we long to experience that joy. Would you show us one person, one group, that you're inviting us to commit to this week. And may we do so as a way to honor you. It's in your name I pray. Amen.